La 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 la.
Can you just say that again? Can you just say that again for me?
Yeah, can you? No, I'm not.
Because that is the start of the show. Please, come on, I want to hear that on the start of the show.
La 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 la. Yeah, that's the one. Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another fabulous week of the Brad and Body Podcast. Hello, Bottomed. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I don't know how fabulous it's going to be, but I do know that we're going to have a great guest. So that's
we do have
we'll
a fabulous
off to
guest.
A good start before
but
we
before
start,
we start Bradley. That. Thank you, Beck Allen, and thank you, everyone, for all that feedback. Absolutely outstanding. What a great pod that was, buddy. I really enjoyed that one.
Yes, yes, and the reaction has been so positive, so we might have to look and see if there's any other opals we want to get on. But right Absolutely. Now, let's get on this boomer of a man, even though that's a misleading intro. You do your thing.
I will do my thing. Well, this one is Where Are They Now? And that's what we're bringing this man in here. Born in Germany but raised in Iowa, this person was one of the most coveted recruits in the nation coming out of high school. The 6'9 center led an undefeated state champions in 1976, and then he made his NBL debut for the Nunawading Spectres at the 24 years of age. In 1991, here's one for your body, he was part of the highest scoring NBL game in history, 186 to 158.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
What did he score in that, Brad?
Let's not go there. Sorry to this person. It was only two, but it was a beautiful two.
It was a big two.
He played 386 games for Nunawading, as I said, Illawarra, West Sydney and Coburg. And after basketball, he was the general manager for the Illawarra Hawks for 7 years. And then he became the general manager, the man of the NBL from 2004 to 2011. And he is a superstar of our sport. And can I say, one of the nicest ones as well. Please welcome Chuck Harmison. Hello, Chuck. Hey.
Hello, guys. Thanks for that beautiful introduction.
The first thing I noticed in that introduction, Chuck, was that you were born in Germany. So was your father or something involved in the military, or how did that come about?
Yeah, my dad was over there in the service. He'd spent about 2 years over there, and I was lucky enough to get born in Augsburg, Germany, on the Army base. But we moved back to Iowa when I was 1 year old, so I'm no more German than you are, buddy.
But does that mean, though, that you would have been eligible potentially to play for Germany in a World Cup or an Olympics?
Yeah, I think so. I remember, I still have it in my scrapbooks. My mom saved everything. I have a letter from somebody saying if I want to, declare to play for Germany, I should do it before I turn 18. Of course, at that stage, I really didn't have any desire to do that. I was too busy having fun in Iowa. So it never came about, but I think I could have, but wasn't going to be.
So, growing up, buddy. Sorry, Chuck. Growing up, just let me talk
Buddy's
to me.
Never grown up.
Yeah,
I've never grown up. Where's he
you're
going?
Not wrong about that. Yeah. let's start that again. No, Jacob. But Chuck, honestly, like growing up, why basketball? Now, I'm assuming basketball was not massive. I mean, it certainly wasn't in Australia back then, and it was. So, why basketball? Where did it come from? Was it height and family?
It was height and family. My dad, both mom and dad, were over 6 foot. Dad was 6'5". He played a bit in. He went to military school and in a freshman at Iowa State. But I grew up in a college town, so basketball was relatively big.
Right.
I never took a huge interest until I had a growth spurt at about age 13. I grew 5 inches to 6'5", and all of a sudden, the high school coach took a little bit of interest in me. There was a playground at the end of the street. I used to go down and shoot baskets all the time. I remember watching the old Boston Celtics in the family living room. And I would put a coat hanger up over the door jamb and shoot balloons in that while I was watching Bill Russell and John Havlicek win championship after championship. So it just kind of grew out of a growth spurt. And from there on, it took off. I was fortunate enough, I lived about two blocks from what called a gym called State Gym, which is one of these old style, you remember the movie Hoosiers, that sort of a gym.
And no, I love those blood, sweat, and tear gyms. Yep, they're the good ones.
Great gym. And I go over there and play pickup basketball with you know, some of my mates who were a couple of years older and the college kids. So I was getting my ass kicked left, right, and center. You know, as a scrawny 15, 16 year old, but having a ball and learning how to play the game, and just kind of went from there.
That's fantastic. Now, what then, coming out of college, how Australia, how did that come about?
Well, it was a long road to get here. I graduated in 1980, really with no plans whatsoever. I remember applying for a job. I think it was with Dow Corning for a sales job and got knocked back, thank goodness. And my coach at the time at college, Lynn Nance, put me in touch with an agent out in New Jersey with a view towards going to Europe to play. So I flew out to Jersey City, and there was a 3 or 4 day tryout camp. It's just a meat market. You know, there's probably 300 or 400 aspiring college graduates looking for jobs. And luckily enough, I got put on a team. The guy that was coaching the team was my future teammate at a team in Belgium. And so he was able to look at and watch me for 4 days and, you know, get a feel for, you know, whether I could play or not. And at the end of that tryout camp, they offered me a contract. And, you know, back then it was 1980. It wasn't bad money. It was $12,000 tax-free. They said they'd give me a Mercedes, and they did. It was about 30 years old.
Did it have tires?
It had tires.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's good.
and they gave me an apartment. So, you know, I went over there before I came to Australia. I went over there in September of 1980. First time I've ever been out of the country. So it was a bit of homesickness, but it worked out well. It was fun. It was, you know, obviously it was a pre-internet, pre-English-speaking TV, pre-anything. You know, I couldn't speak to my mom and dad back home. It was, you know, writing letters and then sending back responses 3 weeks later. So it was a bit isolating, but had a ball. You know, it was most of the other guys on the team, the Belgian guys, all worked. So it was like, all right, wake up in the morning, have breakfast. What am I going to do today? Right, go sightseeing, you know, train from 5:30 to 8:30, and hit the pub and do it all again the next day. So it was great. But about 3/4 of the way through the season, I kind of thought, well, there's more to life than this. Let's see if we can get a job playing in an English-speaking country. And I knew they played basketball in Australia. I can't remember how I found out, but I wrote my dad a letter saying, see what you can find out for me. And luckily enough, a guy 30 miles away from my hometown, Dave Edkins, was just getting started in the business. Wow. And he got me the job with Montawatting. So the following August, I think it was, you know, I packed my bags and show up in Melbourne. And as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. Honestly, Chuck, don't you think Dave Adkins, for what he did for the initial years, especially of the NBL, he should be in a Hall of Fame? Yeah, I mean, he had so many imports that came through him. And he just really understood the Australian scene as to what we were looking for in terms of import talent, you know, how good they needed to be. I think his contribution is hugely overlooked.
Yes, it is. It probably amongst the, you know, what do I want to call them, the hierarchy of basketball, whether you call it basketball Australia or the NBL. Fortunately enough, I've caught up with Dave my last two trips back to Iowa, which have been great. You know, he's got a really sharp memory. And you're right, you know, he was able to put the right guy with the right team. You know,
yeah.
He wasn't going to send somebody down that wasn't going to fit in with Nona Wadding, for example, you know, Coburg. And, you know, there's so many of us that owe so much to Dave. And we had the Hawks actually had him come down when we played our last game in the Snake Pit. He came down kind of as a guest speaker. We flew him out. Not the most charismatic guy to have as a guest speaker, but it was great fun to catch up with him then. And, you know, I'm fortunate I've been in touch with him the last couple of years too. So,
now, Chuck, were you a bit of a hippie in those days? Because I remember you with a headband.
What do you mean in those days? He still is.
Well, you know, Bill Walton. Australia's Bill Walton.
Exactly. Bill Walton was my, you know, my, I guess, childhood idol, and I always wanted to be like him. So the headband was kind of a fixture. Long hair was in then. Not that I had very good long hair because it was too curly. But I wouldn't say I was a hippie. You know, I wasn't into the alternate lifestyle, anything like that. But I did ride my bike. I remember riding my bike down to Albert Park on Friday nights for the pickup games because I lived in Richmond for a while. And, you know, the headband, of course, became a bit of a trademark. And in the early days, it was Theo's Meats. sponsored the headbands.
Yes.
You guys remember Theo?
Absolutely.
Butcher in Melbourne. And so I got the nickname of Meathead sometimes. But
that's not why you got it.
All right, okay.
Nothing to do with the name.
I do remember the Adelaide Faithful giving me a hard time for a lot of years with the headband. So.
Yeah, that was Body probably at the front doorstep waving
likely.
The flag.
More likely.
Look, I'm going to ask a question when I say this, but I just want people to get an idea. I'm a young guy. I'm coming into the Kings, and I'm very, very close with Dean Utoff, a great friend of mine.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to get to that with you and Dean being great mates. Good. But can I just say that when I got to play, I think 96 was your last year, but that was my rookie season. And to play against you was a highlight of my career because I watched you grow, and you were just one of the nicest guys. No one could not like you, but you would knock down the 17-foot jump shot that was just automatic. I reckon you did it in your sleep. Was that just like... Where does that come from? Like you were
That kind of transformed over the years. Because when I first came out, I was a back to the basket center type player, and at 6'8", 195, maybe 200 pounds, that didn't last long with the advent of some of the bigger centers that came out. And physically, I couldn't compete with them as I got older. So I sort of drifted out to that free throw line extended jump shot type player and developed that over the years. Every now and again I'd go inside and try to dunk on somebody if I could, but it didn't happen very often. So and when we had guys like Norman Taylor and Melvin Thomas, it was a no-brainer. There was hardly ever a better back to the basket player than Norman Taylor,
right.
And when he got double or triple teamed, I'm just sitting there waiting to shoot a wide open 15-footer. And it was pretty easy in those days. And the same with Melvin. He was a great inside player as well as an outside player. So that part of my game just developed naturally.
So let me stay on that a little bit. You're watching the game now, and obviously we'll get to the fact that you were doing what you were for the NBL, but so heavily involved in the sport. Do you think that's gone from the game now? There is no inside presence. It's all, stretch fours, shoot the three, run the lanes. Do you look at this and go, man, where's this sport going?
Yes. I have this conversation with my best friend back in Iowa all the time. I say we're both dinosaurs. We're gonna grow old together in rocking chairs, dribbling down our shirts. So there's no hope for either one of us. But it is kind of, it's not frustrating, but it's just, having grown up watching some of the greatest centers of all time. Russell, Chamberlain, Walton.
Yes.
And to see that there's nobody, there are players of that caliber now, and they could be centers, but the game just isn't that way. And whether it's the analytics people or it's the speed or it's the three-point shot, I don't know. I'm not, I'm not a coach. I've never wanted to be a coach. I don't know why the game's developed that way. I could say the big men now are pussies. They don't want to get beat up inside, but that's not fair.
Might be true though.
It might be true. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is kind of frustrating to watch when you know how easy the game can be to play. And, when they're just jacking up threes all the time, I don't know. Doesn't do much for me.
No, I'm with you 100%. I think Brad is judging by what I can see on the screen here. The game has changed substantially, and I don't know if it's for the better, because I think that big man game, the days of Shaq, they're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, even now with Aaron Baines, he could be dominating this game in the NBL if they played him in the post far more than what they have. I think they started against Illawarra.
Yeah. I mean, he did a pretty nice job last night, but he tends to float outside a lot too. And he's overpowering inside. So I don't get it, but I'm not a coach. So
talking about Illawarra, how did you wind up there? Because you live in Wollongong now, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I was playing with the old West Sydney West Stars. So I'd followed Damien Keogh and Rob Scrigney up from Nunawading. Well, I was covered by then, I followed them up from Melbourne. And had one nice year there under Robbie Cadee, and then he did the dirty on us and went off to coach the Opals. And we had Mick Osborne come in our second year, and Mick's a good coach, probably wasn't the right coach for that mix of guys. We had a guy named Ollie Johnson who was a bit out of left field, and basically at the end of that year the old West Stars and the old Supersonics decided to merge.
Yeah.
And that was under Mike Grabowski's reign.
87, stage, I remember. Yep.
Yeah, 87, yeah. And at that stage, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't want to play for Mike. I knew of Mike. I just thought, not sure I want to play with this guy before this guy, even though Damian went there and he's one of my best friends. And I'd gotten to know Dave Lindstrom over the years, mostly by playing preseason games. We'd go down to Shoalhaven and play the Hawks down there, and he would suit up and play, and he could still shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a competitive, fiery guy, and I liked him. And, you know, being from a small town back home, you know, I was ready to move to Wollongong, and we'd been here enough that I knew it was a beautiful place. And so I thought, yeah, this could be good. And I met a lot of the people on the board of directors then too, and got to be good friends with them. So I started playing the year after Gordy hit that shot in Brisbane. So I was another import, and I was still living in Sydney. So here's my commute. Brad, you'll appreciate this. I was living in Cronulla, working in the city center at an art material shop, because we still had to work back then to make a living.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Then driving down to Wollongong to practice, then back to Cronulla. You know,
wow.
So that was a big day. So after a season of that, I said to my wife, well, look at this. We're moving to Wollongong.
Yeah.
And fortunately, she followed me here. We found a nice house and been here for 37 odd years.
Yeah, can I just ask you, that's interesting. In the time that you've been here, in those early years, what were your jobs? What other jobs did you have outside of playing basketball? What do they get you doing?
Well, Dean, you know, going forward a little bit, Dean and I had a huge laugh at the Iowa State Hall of Fame induction ceremony when we were there last month, and he told the people stories about his jobs. But my first job when I got to Australia was working, you know, Young and Jackson's Hotel in Melbourne.
I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Most famous hotel, and there's a picture of a naked lady in there, Chloe. And they said, you're going to be working under Chloe. You're going to be running a jackhammering through a bluestone wall. So I go down there and I say, okay, I'll give this a go. After one day, I go to practice. My hands are shaking. I can't even hear. I said, this is not going to happen. So I lasted one day at that job. Then I got a job. This was, you know, going into summer in Melbourne, of course. I wasn't real keen to work because the beaches were nice.
Yep.
So I got a job. Somehow I got a job at the Herald and Weekly Times loading papers onto the truck. So I would ring up every morning and they would say, yeah, we need you. So I'd go in 10 o'clock, work till 12, go to the pub for lunch, come back, work a couple more hours, go to practice. And if they didn't need work, I'd go to the beach and then go to practice. So that was great. And then about 6 months later, I thought, hey, this isn't quite going to cut it. I was starting to pay rent because I'd moved in with my future wife then. So somehow I got a job at an art materials shop as a storeman and packer. So I would, you know, pack up brushes and paints and canvases and send them out. And about 2 weeks after doing that, management there looked at my resume and said, oh, you got a business degree. You want to be the store manager? I said, yeah, why not? Mm. So I did that. You know, all the time I was still a professional basketballer, even though I was only getting paid $1,000 to play ball.
Yeah.
I did that. Then when we moved to Sydney, I did the same thing in Sydney. I had a friend up here that ran a shop in Kent Street. And then when I moved to Wollongong, I made just enough money to scrape by without having what you would call a real job, but I ran my own sort of handyman business. So I'd made money on the side there doing odd jobs for people and basically did that for the rest of my playing career.
Amazing.
You know, I can't imagine some of today's players, you know, particularly imports, you know, even.
Well, there's, you know, way too much money. But B, I think they're practicing way too much as well. I'm sure they're, you know, probably 6 hours a day, either in gyms.
You know, we are dinosaurs. We are dinosaurs. Chuck, I'm loving hearing you say that because I've been maintaining for ages that these days kids train too much and don't play enough. You need to play. Go to, we used to have carnivals and things to go to and get extra games in. Games is what it was. That's how you learned decision-making and understanding the game, not training. Look at my crossover. Big deal.
Yeah. Let me tell you a story about that. I was back in Iowa. Well, he's probably at least 10 years now. You guys know who Harrison Barnes is, plays for.
Yes, of course. Yep.
He was the hotshot player at my high school sometime in the 2000s. And my best friend was training him, learning, teaching him how to shoot. I met him the first time and sat there in the bleachers with him. He's a pretty quiet guy. And I said, oh, you know, you guys still go and, you know, play pickup games and just, you know, learn the game. He's like, nah, Chuck, all it is AAU. We're just playing games all the time. You know, it's just all structure, all structure, all structure. And you could see it in the way he played at North Carolina and then in the pros. The guy could shoot the hell out of the ball. He had no idea how to get a shot. He had no idea how to get open. He had no idea of the concept of team play. And it was just so frustrating to me to see, you know, he's grown up in a town renowned for great pickup basketball. He, you know, and he just let that opportunity slide. Now, granted, he's making millions of dollars and he's in the NBA, but it just, to me, it was sad that he didn't understand that part of the game and learn that. So
I'm a big believer that I think sports and the sports science has got too much into basketball, probably all sports, but we're just talking about basketball. And, you know, it's all about, you know, and then you hear like day off here and recovery here and we're going to do this. And he's on load management. It's like, mate, I just want to look at a guy in the eye. The load management, like Chuck, you look at Chuck in the eye. Chuck, you good to go? Off you go.
That's it. I'm good to go. And if you don't think I am, you're going to pull me out, put my ass on the bench. So.
And those pickup games at Albert Park. They're legendary. They're absolutely legendary. I don't know if that even happens now.
No,
at MSAC or anywhere.
No, it doesn't happen.
All right, Chuck, I want to talk now about, you know, like we talk about MBL and life and experiences, and there's nothing better than the mates you meet, right? Let's be honest. You do this and you say, you know, out of basketball, when you finish basketball, everyone misses the mateship and everything like that. You and Dean Utoff, I have to talk about Sparky, right? Now, you started, if I'm not mistaken, 83 at the Spectres, but you were college teammates, were you not?
Yeah, we go back a lot longer than that. He and I both went into Iowa State as freshmen at the end of 1976 and played all 4 years there under Lynn Nance, but Coach Nance left about three quarters of the way through our senior season. He had disagreements with the athletic director. But Dean and I, believe it or not, we actually lived together for a little while in one of those mobile homes, you know, trailer park.
Wow.
10 feet wide, 7 foot ceilings, two bedrooms.
You two monsters.
Bouncing around in there. But we had a ball in college. You know, he would try to keep me sober and I would try to get him drunk. And we both succeeded to a certain extent. But I came down here first. I came down to Australia in 81. And that first year I had myself, it was myself, Ron Lemons, and Gary Fox with the three imports. And I'd replaced Rob Mayberry because it was either him or Bill Palmer. Bill got hurt, of course, and Rob wouldn't play on Sundays because he was very religious. So Wadding said, well, we'll get this guy, knowing I wasn't very religious. They'd play any day. I didn't care less. But anyway, so there's the three of us were there. And then they changed the rule we brought Dean out the next year. And he and I played together for a year. Then they changed the rule and cut the number of imports. So one of us was expendable. And I guess Barry thought, well, Ron Lemon's probably a better shooter than I was. Dean obviously was a better rebounder. So I was the expendable one, so I jumped across to Coburg. But Dean and I have kept our friendship going ever since, you know, 76. We don't see each other as much as we should, even though he just lives on the other side of Sydney. But fortunately, we convinced him to come back to Ames, to Iowa State, when he got inducted into the Iowa State Athletic Hall of Fame at the end of September. And I got to tell you, he was the hit of the show. They inducted six different athletes. And he was the last one to speak. They gave him the microphone, and I'm not kidding you, for 20 minutes, he had the whole crowd in stitches telling stories, and they couldn't get him off the stage. It was just
goosebumps listening to it, because whenever I was part of the Kings, he was always the one with the mic, and he always used to say, turn that frown upside down. That was his number one saying, right? And to think that you guys, 50 years later or whatever, are on the complete opposite side of the world and great mates. I mean, I love Dean. He's unbelievable, but just – that to me is just a fabulous story. And that's what basketball is all about.
It's just great. Yeah. And, you know, apart from Dan, and he's probably my closest friend, you know, the other guys you met along the way, you know, guys like you, Damien, everybody, you know, Cal, Al Green, you know, you don't see them that much, but you know, you bump into them and you just pick up conversations you were talking about 30 years ago. It's just great fun.
Amazing.
Yeah. So how do you now, as you finish your career as a player, how did you transition to administration and then obviously the MBL and BA, the roles you had there?
Yeah.
How did that transition happen?
I guess I'm right place at the right time, buddy. When I retired at the end of 96, the Illawarra Hawks were probably one of the few still association-owned teams. And they were looking for, I guess, a little bit more professionalism and were looking to put on a, quote, a general manager. And the fact that I had some business skills, the fact that I was fairly well known in town after playing for 9 years with the Hawks, they said, right, we'll put you in this role as general manager. And things kind of went from there. And then I had a great support group in the with the board of directors that were there, Peter Hilton, Peter Battelle, Murray Clayton, and the people in the office, Yvonne White. I don't know if you guys remember or know Yvonne.
No.
She is still involved with the Hawks sort of on the periphery, but she was a stalwart there for a long time. So, you know, I guess the timing was part of it. I was ready to retire and the job was there. So I did that. And of course, after 2 or 3 years, the writing was on the wall where the Hawks needed to become professional, needed private ownership injection. And we were lucky enough that we had a guy in town, a property developer named John Carson, who came on board and you know, bought the team and really upped the level of professionalism to where it needed to be. And even we moved out of the old DeMountle, nice offices overlooking the beach. And, got a lot of great business partner sponsorships through John's connections. Obviously we won the championship.
Don't gloss over that. That was pretty big. That's the only one they've won, and they're the only foundation club. So that was huge, Chuck. That came under your watch.
Yeah, and we're still the only club that's been around since day one of the NBL, which, you know, gives everybody out here immense pride, even though we've been, you know, close to falling over a number of times. So, you know, there's so much credit has got to go to John Carson on this. And, you know, it's a shame he couldn't continue on with it. But, you know, once he sold it to different, a group of investors, I kept working for them for a while. But going from answering to one boss to answering to a dozen bosses just kind of stretched me at that stage. So I said, right, I've had enough of this. And I'll go back a step. I'd met Rick Burton because he'd come down and done some marketing talks with the NBL when I was the GM of the Hawks and got to know him really, really well. So when I think he had just gotten hired as the commissioner of the NBL in 2004. And he spoke to me and said, Chuck, I need a general manager of operations, but I can't hire you until we get a naming rights sponsor. So this was July of 2004. I was heading back to the States for a holiday. I'd quit the Hawks, didn't have any job to come back to. So I spent 6 weeks over in the States, came back, didn't have a job, didn't hanging on. Then I get a call from Rick saying, guess what? We just signed Phillips as a sponsor. You're hired. Let's go.
Wow.
So, you know, I worked for Rick for as long as he was there. And then,
Chuck, Rick was American. And I don't know, some smart aleck journalist said that you were hired to be his interpreter.
Something like that. I just we had a conversation with Rick. We drove back through Syracuse last month when we were in the States and had a chance to catch up with Rick and his wife. Still great friends. You know, I think he's back in his element in academia, which is probably where he's best.
But, yes.
We had great times together here in the NBL. So, but I worked with him for a while. And then when he left, they ill-fatedly made me, you know, temporary commissioner, which was not suited to my skill set. You know, I'm not a marketing guy. I'm not a guy that's going to go out and, you know, sell a lot of sponsorships. So, you know, I was kind of a caretaker for a while. But it was fun. It was fun.
All right. Well, we've reached that point, Chuck. We've reached that point where we're going to fire some names at you. And you just got to throw back the first thing that pops in your head. It can be a word, a sentence, or an anecdote. Any one of the three. I'm going to leave this off with Barry Barnes.
The Vein.
We should spell that V-E-I-N.
We've done 101 episodes of this, or 102 now. No one has used Barry Barnes as that analogy. That's fabulous. I'm going to do one, although you have spoken a lot, but I'm going to go there anyway. Dean Utoff.
Best friend.
Yeah, nice.
Yep.
Okay. Brendan Joyce.
Intense.
Nice. Next one, Gordy McLeod.
The original Hawk.
Okay. And I got one to finish with. A bit of left field, Christina Keneally.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And smart. Let me put
hello to Mrs. Harmison. And the last one, I'll give it out there. Andrew Gaze.
Oh, legend.
Beautiful. Yeah. Chuck, I remember seeing you, oh, I don't know, 6-8 months ago at a Kings game, and I walked past you, and you're like, man, I've got to get on that pod.
Yeah,
and I was like, and you know, Body and I were speaking, we're like, yeah, Chuck's got to be on there, mate. Thank you so much. Yeah. You are one of the nicest guys, but a damn good player, damn good administrator, and thank you for everything you've done for our sport. You're second to none.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Man, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys. Really been fun.
Oh, he's a good man, Chuck. Absolutely. A good man. That was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
I do like the idea. Good point. Bring him back. It's always, I love hearing about the, you know, where are they now? I love that story.
Yeah. Well, he's got a lot to offer too in terms of how the game's changed,
oh, 100%.
How he sees it. And of course his intimate knowledge of Illawarra Hawks who, you know, they're traveling down that sort of ugly path again after a couple of years where they look pretty good. So, and that's been the history of that club, up and down, up and down. So might be worth having him back. But in the meantime, let's catch up with some NBL. We've got WNBL coming up next week.
All right,
week
I'm going to start first. I want when you're hot, you're hot.
When you're hot, you're hot. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Well, mine is the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, mate. It has to be. What a performance. Flogging Perth by 30 plus. Down at quarter time, they were trailing. So for three quarters, they just showed us what team basketball looks like, what a great coach looks like, and what a team that is committed to each other and to their mutual success looks like. It was brilliant. That team is hot, and that's as good as it gets. What have you got for us on the same topic? Who's hot?
Aaron Baines. I was at that game. We're doing this on a Tuesday, just so everyone knows. I was at that game last night, Illawarra versus Brisbane. Let's not talk about Illawarra. We'll just stay on Brisbane. Aaron Baines, he was 13-9 going into halftime, finished with 17-14, 3 offensive rebounds. He was phenomenal last night. Finally got deep catches where he could work around the basket and Illawarra just had no answer for him. He was great.
I think they're going to win again on Thursday. Obviously, I don't see a great deal changing when the two teams meet
again. Well, Peyton Seaver will be there, so it will be interesting to
see
what
he does. He'll make a difference,
no question. He will, because, I mean, Tyler Harvey, mate, you know, he had 13 points from 18 shots. You know, like, it's just, he is struggling. He needs that pure point guard. I don't know if that's enough, because Lachie Dent is doing a good job. I feel for Lachie, although he was 1-7 from the 3 last night. I feel for Lachie because he's playing well, but it's just not working, that team. Not working.
And I would say that, you know, I mentioned that the backcourt of Harvey Dent is a Batman villain. I've had plenty of confirmations that that is correct.
I still think it's someone from Suits.
No, that's Harvey Specter. You're messing up. And then there's James Bond that has the Specter. Anyway, listen, give us your Rosen Rattler before we go right off the deep end.
Well, I'm gonna go completely right field here. The 3-point shot. Everyone's settling for this too much, Body. And it's interesting because I was just listening to Chuck then, and, you know, like he's saying, there's no centers and no people inside now. Mate, you know, you take Illawarra last night, they shot 71 shots, 35 of them. That's 50% of your shots, basically, from the 3-point line. Brisbane, not so bad, 70 shots and 25. But you look at all the sets now, there are teams, and I could name every team, where you watch them, they'll dribble down, they do not get inside the 3-point line. They do not get inside. It's dribble, dribble, handoff, dribble, dribble, flare screen, dribble, dribble. Oh, my God, there's 8 seconds, shoot. And I'm just like, mate, this is – where is this game heading? It is just 3-3-3. I miss it. I don't like it. That's my rattler.
Yeah, and I got to agree with you because I hate seeing that and seeing players of the offensive team arrive. Shots already gone up. They're not even able to contest an offensive rebound. There's four guys packed in the defensive keyway, get the rebound out there, go down the other end. Same crap happens. And they haven't actually arrived yet when someone else has jacked one up. And when the game deteriorates to that, oh, it's very hard to watch for me, I've got to say. That's when I'll go and take a Hungry Jack's break. I should have said Burger Boss. I feel really bad now to our sponsors. That is a serious apology.
All right, give me a nodge nasty.
Well, I got a nodge nicey as well as a nodge nasty. Ooh, I want to say that I'm impressed with Damon Lowry. I don't watch any of the TV programs about the NBL, so I don't know what he's like on whatever it is, Crossover, Jump, or whatever. I'm not sure what show he's on. But I heard his commentary on the Melbourne United Cairns Taipans game, and I thought it was very good, very insightful. He made a lot of good calls, good predictions. He told us about matchups. You know, he was kept us right awake to why Keanu Pinder was eating Isaac Humphries, much the same as the week before, Brad, when you were talking about the Isaiah Liafa Tyler Harvey matchup. Guys that give you genuine insights and not busy patting themselves on the back and talking about their 50-point game or whatever it is. You know, that's who I want to listen to. I was very impressed. That's my nicey. My nudge nasty, because I can't resist. Carrying the ball. God almighty, I hate it. The amount of times a guy will dribble, hold the ball, dribble, hold the ball in his palm, dribble, hold the ball in his palm, now make a pass. It's just, I mean, if that was actually legal, what sort of players could we have been, Brad? We would have been superstars.
Yeah.
And I say we lightly.
Yeah. I would have never been a superstar, don't worry. But that is a very good point. And going back to that commentary, it's a good pickup. There was two guys I'm going to give it to, and that's Adam Howarth, who has been around Foxtel for years.
Absolutely.
And Bill Baxter, who's a very good friend of mine that I did Tremendous. Channel 9 with, right? Yep. Those two always used to say, tell me what's going to happen. That's what, you know, as a commentator, tell me what's going to happen. If it doesn't, okay. But if you tell me what's going to happen, that's what your job is. And I love hearing you say that. That's quite nice. And well done to what you're saying, and well done to Damon, because that is what our job is.
That's the art.
Tell the viewers what, it is the art. It's good. Mate, thank you to Burger Boss, let me just say. Loving Burger Boss.
Sorry.
We loving them. Piranha Media, thank you for your support. And to everyone, look, keep the feedback coming. We love it. And as I always say, let us know if you want someone on the pod. We're always, you know, we do get a lot of requests, which is great, from players and even, you know, listeners saying, oh, I'd love to see this person or that person. But please let us on. We're looking forward to the WNBL starting soon, Boddy. So we'll get some stuff going that. And thank you to everyone. Boddy, what you got, mate? Nothing more. We're out of here.
No, looking forward to another good round this week and plenty of controversy, hopefully. And maybe some home teams will win a game now and then.
Nah, won't happen.
See ya.
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
So, you know, when we were talking to Chuck, and I was mentioning about a smart aleck reporter that may have said he was hired as an interpreter for Rick Burton, the American. That, you know how he said he didn't really enjoy being NBL commissioner because it was out of his wheelhouse, really, as to what he was asked to do? Well, he didn't really make a lot of decisions during that time. And I think that same smart aleck reporter may have gone from calling him Chuck Harmison to Chuck Harmless One.
You are Adelaide's finest reporter, aren't you?